Bill scheduled for public hearing today, House Bill 2513, 2742, and 2792. And at this point, I would like to open a public hearing on House Bill 2513. And Steve, could you give us a brief little description of this House bill?
Thank you, Chair Holvey. House Bill 2513 prohibits a person from issuing a gift card that expires or has a face value that declines over time or with lack of use.
Thank you. And with that, I'd like to call up Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Chair Holvey and committee. For the record, I'm Carolyn Tomei, State Representative from House District 41, which is the city of Milwaukee and parts of Southeast Portland. It is a pleasure to submit this testimony today in support of House Bill 2513, which prohibits businesses from issuing gift cards that expire or lose value over time. I have heard from many frustrated constituents about the expiration or inactivity fees imposed on the gift cards they purchase. And, of course, I'm sure we've all had similar personal experiences. The magnitude of the monetary loss is staggering. Americans spent over $70 billion on gift cards during 2005. And this is a year-old statistic. I think this last year, probably at Christmas time, many, many more gift cards were sold. Because of service fees and expiration dates, consumers lose at least 10% of the values of these cards. And that is a loss of $7 billion a year. Again, that's $7 billion a year that consumers lose. Gift cards fees are unreasonably high. The fees generally range from $1.50 to $2.50 per month. An estimated 23% of retailers issuing gift cards impose such fees, and two-thirds fail to disclose service fees when the cards are purchased. In addition, retailers don't need service fees or expiration dates to receive substantial economic benefits from the sale of gift cards. They get the money up front and have the use of those funds interest-free. Gift cards guarantee that consumers will come into the stores, and once they're in the store, half of the gift card holders spend more than the amount of the gift card. Over 20 states have already enacted legislation regulating gift card fees and expiration dates. And I especially want you to look at the written testimony of Heidi Yorkshire. The written testimony should be in your files. Heidi was unable to come today, but she wanted you to hear her story. She had a gift card from a national bookstore chain. When she went to her local retailer, she was told that the card had expired and had no value. But on her next trip south, she took the card to a California branch, and in California, there was over $80 of value left on that card. The California store reissued the gift card, which she then brought back to be honored in Oregon. Colleagues, this is wrong. When a person buys a gift card, they need to be assured that the recipient will receive the full value. I urge your support for House Bill 2513, and I'm open to questions.
Thank you, Representative. Questions from the committee. Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Tomei, for your bill and the testimony. I have a question about the, you mentioned the fees that are generally ranging from $1.50 to $2.50 per month. How are those collected? Or do they
They're
drop
deducted
off the
from
balance?
The value of the card until eventually there's no value on the card.
Thank you.
Representative Girard.
Thank you, Chair Holvey. Representative Tomei, I'm kind of reading through the bill here, and I love how these things are written this year, but I'm having trouble with Section 2 and Section 3, because what I read isn't what the bill summary is saying, and so that's where I'm a little bit at odds, because Section 2 is a double negative, and except as provided in Section 3, a person may not issue a gift card, and that kind of goes into what the when you can't. But then below it says that a person may issue a gift card that has an expiration date if, and it talks about the fonts and that sort of thing. So it seems to me, with all the negatives in there, that you might, the bill actually says you can issue one of these cards if it has a certain size font.
Representative Garrett, if I could, Mr. Chair, Representative Garrett, if I could respond to that. So if you go to a restaurant and say you get a meal that's not satisfactory and you complain to the manager, they might give you a gift certificate that has an expiration date on it, and it's large. Yeah. That makes sense. When you buy, however, a gift card from Safeway or Sears, and it's just a card, it's like a credit card, there is not a place on that card that says that there is an expiration date. So you don't know until you go to buy something at Sears or at the bookstore that's mentioned in the testimony that there was an expiration date and that there was a service fee for each month that you didn't use it. Does that make sense?
Representative Chair Holman?
Follow up, Representative Gerard.
What I'm reading here is that the summary says it prohibits a person from issuing gift cards that expire or have face values that decline over time. And that's Section 2. Section 3 basically states the exceptions, which all you're really asking for is a font size that's a 10-point type and that and over.
Well, it's really meant, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, Representative Gerard. It's really meant for if you have, say, a fundraiser at your school, mm-hmm. and you go to a local hamburger place, and they might give you a certificate for two hamburgers. Mm-hmm. And so it's that kind of thing that is promotional, and someone doesn't pay for that. What we're trying to do is cover cards that one pays for, like a gift card from Sears or a bookstore or whatever. But if there's something promotional, if you're given this as a gift, no one has paid for it, but the institution, the hamburger place, might be giving you a gift certificate that does have an expiration date. Do you see, they're actually two different things, but you've got to cover the same thing in the bill. So Section 2 would be like for the gift cards from the big stores. Section 3 would be maybe for the promotional, say a new restaurant is opening up in your area and they want to get business, so for 1 week you can get a free meal.
Follow-up, Jerome?
Follow up, please.
Just the last one. I'm not trying to harp on a dead horse here, but Section 3 says a person may issue a gift card that has an expiration date if the font of the gift card bears in at least a 10-point type the word expires on or expiration date followed by the date on which the card expires. So that seems like that's all you're really asking for in the bill, and I think you're asking for more than that.
We're trying to cover all the bases, Mr. Chair, Representative Gerard.
Okay.
Sure. Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to follow up on Representative Gerard. Maybe the way I read Section 3 is that there are four subsections. And the first one is about expiration date. The second one, the third one says the person who issues a gift card, is it a cost below face value or the card for no consideration? But even with that, I have a little trouble. I think the below face value part of it is a problem for me. I mean, that means you did pay something for it. And that bothers me a bit. But it does further restrict Section 3, if I read it right.
Trying to restrict Section 3.
Is that right?
Okay, I was being talked to in one ear and I was trying to listen to you out of the other ear, and I was not doing a good job of either. So could you repeat that, please?
Well, what I was saying is that in Section 3, it's true that Subsection 1 only deals with expiration date, but Subsection 3, in addition, the person issues a gift card at a cost below the face value of the card or at no consideration. So that's a further explanation of when a card can expire. But even saying that, I have a bit of a problem with subsection 3 because of the at a cost below face value phrase. That means that you did pay something for the card. So I'm looking at line 28.
Right. Yes, I can see what you're saying. Are you trying to help me?
I think all of those provisions in that section are joined with an and.
Okay.
So that they can only do it. You have the expiration date and they're giving us a presumption.
Okay, I'm hearing from two different people that pointing to line 29, all of those are in effect, and
right.
The gift card does not expire until 30 days after the date of issuance.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Riley.
And I agree, that's exactly what this is. Subsection 3 has four, Section 3 has four subsections, all of which must be in effect. Subsection 3, however, on line 28, implies that if there is a cost, but it's below the face value, it can expire. And that
right.
kind of goes against a little bit.
Right. And it may be that this was gotten, Mr. Chair, Representative Riley, that may be at an auction where one did not pay the full value. That you paid something at the auction. At a gift auction. No, that would be, and if you purchased it below the face value or for no consideration, no money, and the gift card does not expire until at least 30 days after the date of issuance.
So where's the 20?
So you want to allow, excuse me, Mr. Chair, follow up, please.
Follow up, please.
So you want to allow a card which is purchased at auction for below face value to expire.
That would be allowable, I think, Mr. Chair. Representative Riley.
Thank you. If this goes forward, I would like to have an amendment to this bill.
That cleans it up.
I would probably not argue with that.
Maybe you can talk to Representative Tomei about that.
Yes.
Representative Galizio, a question.
Yes, Representative Tomei, back to the letter from your constituent.
Yes.
Am I correct that this, in other words, this wasn't the result of an error? Was this $80 value? Why did this happen? Because California has a different law?
Yes.
Because
California.
Arnold's the governor? I mean, why does
that's
this happen?
That's right. And you don't fight with that governor.
Yeah. Is it because of it's a state law? I think
their law is different from ours, so it's not allowed to have an expiration date, and that it expired in Oregon, but it had not expired in California. So then they reissued her another card that was still viable in Oregon.
Thank you.
Further questions for Representative Tomei? Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Tomei, for coming today. I feel like calling you Madam Chair, of course, which brings me to just a quick question. I appreciate you coming on this issue because I know you have so much on your plate, and I just wanted to ask you, do you serve on other committees in the House?
Mr. Chair, yes, Representative, I do.
And is there a particular committee that is your favorite, if I could follow up?
Mr. Chair,
I'm concerned about this line of questioning.
Well, I just have one more follow-up, Mr. Chair. In your party, notwithstanding, are there favorites on that committee that you serve on that you'd like to indicate this time?
Mr. Chair, as with my children, I have no favorites.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
14 in Mittergott.
And I think he deserved that. Thank you for that. Do we have any further real questions for the representative?
Mr. Chair, I think I need to work some on this bill, and I'd be willing to work. I know that Representative Nelson and Representative Riley have some ideas, and I would love to work with them, and maybe we can make this a better bill. Maybe Representative Girard.
Right. I have one question. I was kind of reading this bill over, is in this bill, nothing gives anybody a right to cash their gift card in for cash.
That's not my intent.
Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony today. Pleasure to see you here.
Thank you.
Sorry we didn't get to you last week. It's our different schedule than we had planned. So I appreciate you taking the time and coming back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for allowing us to hear this bill. And thank you to the committee. Thank you for your questions. I'll work hard on this.
Thank you. And, gosh, I didn't realize Representative Nelson has signed up to testify on this bill. I should have had you up at the same time.
Absolutely.
I apologize for that.
Especially since Carolyn doesn't have seniority.
Why didn't you help me? she is the chief sponsor of the bill, though.
That is true.
So, Representative Nelson,
thank
you.
You
can identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair. I'm State Representative Donna Nelson, District 24. And thank you very much, good members of this good Consumers Committee, for all you do and the good you've done for all of our great people in our state and will continue to do. Chair Holby, fellow members of the House Committee on Consumer Protection, I thank you for your consideration today of House Bill 2513, an important bill to protect Oregon's consumers who purchase and use gift cards. Many states already have similar legislation. California forbids the use of expiration dates and fees on gift cards under most circumstances. Connecticut, Montana, and Rhode Island prohibit gift card expiration dates and fees altogether. Over half of our 50 states have some type of consumer protections limiting expiration dates or fees on gift cards. It's time for Oregon to join the ranks of states that protect consumers against losses from bad gift card policies. One day before we leave this legislature, Representative Tomei and I are going to get this bill passed, and let's just hope that it is this year. It is long, long overdue. House Bill 2513 is a good bill not only for what it does, but what it doesn't do. Unlike other proposed legislation, House Bill 2513 does not include any provision allowing the state to claim unused gift cards as abandoned property. Colleagues, there's no need for the Department of State Lands to assume control of unused gift cards. We simply need to pass House Bill 2513 and not create yet another government bureaucracy. When it comes to gift cards, consumers need only two protections: protection from expiration dates and protection from fees. House Bill 2513 provides those protections and nothing more. I urge you to support this bill, and I want to address several of the issues, and we have spoken to those before, but over the years in my alter profession, I guess I should say, as a professional engineer, auctioneer, wish it were engineer, auctioneer, I come in contact with individuals and clubs and associations and businesses that are given these gift cards by the thousands. I mean, in fact, I just wish I had the money back for all those that I myself had purchased when I over-auctioned. It is really critical that we define that this is not money. This is a gift for merchandise or services. It is very important that we establish what can be an expiration date. We have various individuals here today that may have an idea. Truthfully, if I were a business, I'd want to track these, because at some time, that's quite a large accounts payable I've got that's going to come in at some time. And as you review a number of these rules from the different states, I think the one that's most practical is that we have one that says 2 years from date of issue, which should give an individual time to have spent these cards, not paid fees, but gotten their merchandise. If I were a business, I would want some type of protection. But to have one that says in 30 days, is just not appropriate. Often in my auctions and other charitable events across the state, we'll have those, and I mean, it's 5 days after the auction. is all they have left by the time, you know, the cards are actually given to whoever buys them or would give them, for example. So I think a 30-day expiration is way too soon. And also, one other serious issue as we look into this, and we know we need to amend this bill, here is a typical case of what happens, is I'm a fast food restaurant, and I give all these gift cards out to be used for the school to get something, and I go out of business. The successor restaurant owner is not responsible for my payables, but at the same time, you see, you know, this could be a lot of money for individuals who have not spent theirs. So there needs to be some consideration there of what we would do. I don't know. Maybe Representative Bonamici could help us. We don't know what to do when there's a successor business. And frankly, I know what it's like to have that happen. And at quite large amounts. For example, some nurseries that gave cards. And these were ones that individuals had spent, you know, some $200, $300 for to get these shrubs. And they got a business. So we're not sure, but we know that's not covered here. And I'm sure there are other issues that need to be resolved. But it is the concept is good, and we need to make it right, and appreciate all the input.
Thank you. Questions of Representative Nelson. Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Did I understand you right that you believe we should limit the we should let cards expire after 2 years?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Riley. If we have to get this bill passed, if we have to have an expiration date of some sort to get the approval, I would recommend 2 years, is what I mean.
So you follow up, please?
Follow up.
So you don't really think we should have an expiration date, but you would be willing to concede it? Is that what you're telling me?
I would, Mr. Chair, Representative Riley. Yes, I would, because we just need to get this moving. We may find that, you know, in the next session, y'all, you know, may need to adjust it, but let's just get it going. It's been way too long this has gone on. In fact, I did not know, truthfully, for a long time in my business, I did not know that these could expire. In fact, I would tell all the businesses that were contributing, you know, things to Sir Optimist or Lions or Rotary, so forth, to remember that. You know, if you're giving us some cards for services or materials, you know, they do not expire, because I felt it was there's kind of an ethics thing about my auction and people winning it and then not getting anything.
Further questions? Representative Gilliam.
Thank you.
A real question.
Yes, sir. I have a real question, Mr. Chair. Representative Nelson, do you know, is there a part of this bill that addresses the whole idea of refunds? In other words, you know, you can't get cash back,
right,
under this bill. Is that correct?
That's right. Merchandise or rendered service.
I don't know where that is. Do you
follow up?
Do you know where that is?
No, I mean, you're right. It does need to specify that.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Galizia.
I was intrigued that you said you might even accept a 2-year expiration. Isn't there already kind of a market-based solution? In other words, the value, because of inflation, the value of the purchase, the value of the card is reduced the longer you wait. So just by sort of market forces already provide the business that issued the card a break. Isn't that true? You see what I mean? In other words, if today I purchased for you a $100 card, gift card for some business, I don't want to say
gasoline.
And then you waited, mm-hmm, you waited 2 years before you used it. Because of inflation, it would probably be worth, I don't know, $85.
Sure, you're right.
So isn't there already a market-based...
Mr. Chair and Representative Galizio, you're right. And unfortunately or fortunately, if I were the recipient, the owner of this gift card, you know, I'd want to use it immediately. Like Representative Riley was saying, if it's for gas, you better use it immediately or it's not going to be worth anything by the time you get up to the pump. But you're right. It does have basically have a value distributor, I guess we would say.
Representative
Bonamici. A restrictor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Nelson. I'm also one of the co-sponsors of the bill. I just want to suggest that there is a bit of an ambiguity with regard to the questions about the ability to change the gift card for cash in Section 2, Subsection 3, which says that a person may not issue a gift card that prohibits the bearer at no cost to the bearer from exchanging the gift card for cash. Or a new gift card in an amount equal to the cash value of the card. So I'm just bringing that up because I think that that is ambiguous, and if that's not the intent, I think in when changes are being made, because I know your written testimony says all it does is no expiration, no fees. So I just want to bring that up, and I think we may have some testimony about that issue. So I think we need to clarify that if that's not the intent.
Mr. Chair and Representative Bonamici, absolutely, and I've highlighted all those things that I think need changed, and I'm not sure who wrote this bill for Representative Tomei, but we do need to work on it together and make it right.
Thank you. Further questions? Thank you, Representative Nelson. I appreciate you bringing this bill for it, but I don't think it's going to help me. I've been looking for a gift card, $100 gift card, for over 2 years now, and I haven't found it yet. So I'm a little bit depressed now after hearing this testimony that I won't be able to use it if I do find it. So,
one you already have, me.
You know what's worse than that, may I say, Mr. Chair, is to lose a savings bond.
Next up, Bill Perry and Julie Brandis.
Thank you, Chair Wilby, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Bill Perry. I'm with the Oregon Restaurant Association, and I want to say that the restaurant that Carolyn Tomei referred to in her testimony was not one of my members. I'm here kind of in support of 2513 from the standpoint of I think there have been a lot of questions about the way it's written, and I think I share some of the same concerns, but I think the intent here is fine by our members. I would say I don't think you need to negotiate the expiration date. I think if you get a straight expiration service charge bill, I don't think you're going to have opposition, as you will see that some of the people following us want the state to take all that money, and that's, I think, where your opposition ends up coming, is because I think they try to bite off a little bit more than I think most people are willing to compromise on. So with that, I actually have a couple of recommended amendments, and I know we have an attorney on council that could, or attorney on the committee that could shoot me down if she doesn't agree with the way I've done this. But under line 6, gift card definition, section 2, the Senate has a version of this that does exactly what I talked about. It audits gift cards, takes the money away from the vendor. And so what they did was they changed their definition of gift card, and they did it in both ways, and I don't know if it needs to be done that way, but a gift card means a insertion purchased, then go back to the original pre-funded record, and then they inserted sold or purchased at retail issued for consideration. I don't know why they put both of them in. I think one of them is kind of sufficient, and to Representative Riley's point earlier about at the bottom where the gift card sold at below base value, I just give one of the examples is there are, I know of a couple of restaurants, and what they will do is they will sell the gift card or gift certificate at cost to a local school. So basically what they do is recover the cost of whatever the minimum, like food or in this case would be, like labor and everything else would be on top of it. So there are certain examples where they're sold just for the cost of the product, not the service, as we can get into. I'm not saying, obviously, so I prefer it to be sold at retail, but that is an issue that you may still have with. But I think that's that purchased at retail portion was not offered by me in the Senate committee, but I do know there are more than just my industry that have a concern with that. And then I also want to address the issue that Representative Tomei brought up about the auction, because I don't necessarily think that's accurate, because on line 7 it says by the issuer, and usually if you have something at an auction, it's not sold by the issuer. It's donated by the issuer, but sold by somebody else. So the auction part of it would not be covered under the amended version of this bill, because it's still donated by the issuer. I don't know if I haven't heard from Representative Bonamici whether or not she thinks I'm accurate in that point. But I would say that also I had a conversation with Representative Tomei about the issue of for cash value, and the way it is written, line 11 when it says may not issue, and then line 16 and 17 that prohibits them from exchanging it for cash, it does say that you can get cash value. And I think Representative Tomei didn't directly issue your question. What she said was it was not my intent. I don't think she said it wasn't included. But just from sitting in the background, I'm not trying to speak for her. But I did bring up that issue, and she told me that it was not her intent also. So from my standpoint, you could get rid of Section 3 if you make the amendment in Section 1 that talks about purchased. If you purchase them, you redeem them. Period. Because I do think that there's a lot of donated gift cards that, like, my restaurants will do for promotion. They'll do them for a school group or anything else. We don't ever check to see if they're nonprofits or other things, so there might be ways that they would fall out of that category, unbeknownst to me, just because I'm doing it for promotional purposes, giving to local community groups, just because I want to be an active member of the community. That way you don't have to, you know, it doesn't meet all 4 or 5 criteria. So my preference would be, say, if you purchased it, you redeem it. Or you purchase it, you redeem it. No expiration dates, no service charges. I don't think you'll get any arguments from us on those. It's, you know, how do I check what if they meet all 4 criteria? It's just asking kind of a bigger burden for a lot of these people that do a lot of donations. Because I think when you get small independent restaurants, a lot of them are almost 50% purchased and 50% donated, because they don't have budgeting or advertising budgets like some of their competitors do, so they do it through donated gift cards. I hope all that made sense, and I'd be happy to answer any questions if you'd like.
Ms. Brandes, would you go ahead and give us your testimony, and then we'll open it up to questions of the two of you.
Sure. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Julie Brandes with Associated Oregon Industries and its Retail Council. For your information, we represent the nation's largest retailers. They do not have a problem with making it so a card can't have an expiration date. They understand that. Most of the companies I represent do not use a fee system, so they're okay with that. What they are very concerned about is the language that we have pointed out to many of you about redeeming a gift card for cash. If that section was taken out, and I also think if that section was taken out, I think we would be in the right direction, and with some of the clarification that's been discussed in committee. I think also in terms of purchased, I think that's an important addition to the legislation, because there are many different types of promotional gift cards. I think Bill was talking about restaurants and giving them to local auctions and charities and school districts for whatever purposes. We use promotional gift cards, too. If you come in and buy an expensive item at a store, we might reward you with some other type of promotional gift card. You didn't buy that. That's a promotion. So if you buy if you buy an expensive computer system and you get $150 to spend at the store at some other later time, that might be why you need the language purchase. That's more of a gift or a promotion. So those are our primary concerns, and I'd be happy to work with the committee or anyone else to redraft the bill.
I think I'm going to start the questions out first on this one, and Mr. Perry's probably nervous about my questions today. But
always a pleasure, sir.
I'm curious about the redeeming the gift card for cash, and understand that there might be some, I suppose, some overhead and some issues around doing that. Do you think that a person ought to be able to redeem it for cash, but allowing a certain percentage of a discounted value for administrative costs or something to that effect. I mean, what would make, would there be a cash amount that some, that industry would be okay with to, in redeeming a card, like a certain percentage of the card, like a card's, you know, discounted cash value is 90% of face value or something like that?
Chair Hovey, members of the committee, once again, Bill Perry. I offered that as a kind of a recommendation because I think a majority of my members will give you change back if you purchase something. Some obviously prefer to put the value back on the card. That's the luxury of having gift cards, is you can change the value without changing the product per se. I mean, basically what I told her is I said there is an expense to producing it, tracking it, and everything else, and I'm not going to sit here and tell you it's a large percentage, but I could probably give you an assessment of what that cost is for me, but some other retailers that have a higher redemption rate of gift cards and everything else, the expense per card from a retail perspective is not always easy to do. So, I mean, the devil's going to be in the details is what do you pick as that percentage. There's probably going to be a certain percentage that's okay for me that's not for somebody else. Mm-hmm. So I just think it gets confusing, and I would say there are retailers, both restaurants and I think general retail stores, that give cash back today. Not all of them do. But I just think you get into a negotiation point that gets a little bit of confusing. It has some different people on the side. Like I said, we do cash back a lot of times, so you're probably going to hit that gag point quicker for me than you are for some other. Did I say that backwards?
You said backwards.
But it's not going to be as much of an issue for me, but I think it is some others. And I think the expiration date and the service charge is something that most people agree on pretty readily. I don't think there's any issues related to it. So it just depends on how much time you want to spend on the issue, I guess.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I certainly have to go back to our membership on that. My concern, what they have said in other states, as I reflected upon their testimony in other states on similar issues, is that makes them, you know, similar to a bank. They're holding possibly holding cash. If since most gift cards are given as gifts, hence the name, the person could always give cash. So I brought my mother-in-law gives me a Nordstrom's gift card every month for a variety of values. And I think everybody in the Capitol knows I carry them in my briefcase, so I'm better stop doing that. But anyway, she does that. If she wanted to give me cash, she certainly could. But her intent is to give me something to go shopping for myself. So that is the reason why we have generally opposed that in other states. If they wanted to give cash, they certainly could.
Questions? Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just trying to figure out this whole system that you're suggesting of having two different categories. One is if it's a gift card that's purchased, and one is if it's a gift card that's donated. And I'm trying to figure out how that logistically is going to work. So I could have, for example, a gift card that somebody gave me for $20 to a coffee shop, or a card that I bought at an auction or some charity event for $20, and one of them could expire and one of them couldn't under your suggestion? I'm just trying to figure out logistically.
Well, Representative Holman and Representative Bonamici, I think that this sets up two different standards, and actually that's what I was saying is from my perspective, the reason why I've offered it is because I think it makes it a little bit less confusing, because one, a purchased or non-purchased, I think, is a easier distinction from a retailer standpoint and what you put on the card. Because remember, under Section 3, you can do a donated gift card if it meets all four requirements, and you have to put expiration date and everything else. But theoretically, the magnetic stripe is what's going to, you can program that stuff in there. And so as long as you take it back to the retailer that's got the magnetic striping, they will tell you whether or not it's been purchased or not. And I would actually say the way that this is written, it might even set up three categories, because there's purchased, non, and then the ones that fall under Section 3. That's why I just think the way this is separated them out makes it a little bit more confusing, where a purchased versus non-purchased, I'm arguing, I think, is an easier standard than the two standards that's set up in this bill. Does that answer your question?
In a way, but I'm trying to figure out if it's, The suggestion then is if it's one of these donated gift cards, that it can expire.
Yeah.
So does Are you suggesting that we still don't need to have an expiration date notice on the front, which is what this bill contemplates? And I think that's so the consumer knows. I have this gift card, and it says right on the front it's going to expire. If you put it on the strip, they're not going to be able to read it. So they're not going to know, well, this is a gift card that expires.
Mm-hmm. No.
I think that's the whole point of having the written notice on the card, so that the consumer knows, this is a gift card that's going to expire. I'm going to have to use it.
And Chair Hovey, Representative Bonamici, I actually mentioned that to Representative Tomei, is that I understand why the expiration date is early. I do think, oh, once again, this Bill Perry, I'm assuming since Julie's on the record, you can tell the difference between a tone of her voice, high and low, but her prop is, I mean, the problem with it is the gift cards, they don't really have space for it. Generally what you do as a retailer is you just have a stack of them there. Some of them expire or whatever, and so they don't always keep them on. If you wanted to do somewhere required a sticker or something else, that's probably a little bit, that portion of it probably is okay. I'm just, the practical application is a little bit confusing at this point in time, because like I said, I usually just have a stack of cards and then I program and run them. If for some reason you sent one out that was donated without an expiration date and the magnetic stripping read it differently, I think it gets confusing. And once again, the business is making a donation, which means they're, you know, not making any money, actually losing money off of it. And so you're just adding an additional expense to that. Not that I'm going to tell you it's more than $2, but depending on what your price point is, that, you know, like a Sherry's who does gift cards, their average meal is $10. When you add a $2 expense to it to have them manufacture a different card, it is a little bit more expensive. And that's why I'm saying is you can sit here and look at the difference between Target and your local Cafe Today downstairs that does gift cards. Their expense for a gift card program is much different because of economies of scale. So if it's needed, you know, you tell me, you guys are making the votes, but I would be preferred not to have it on there.
Thank you.
Julie?
In terms of promotional gift cards, in reality, I think mostly what the members that I, or the retailers that I represent do, is it's probably been more construed in your mind or more defined in your mind as a gift certificate. So if, for example, any one of you who might shop at Nordstrom's may recognize that you get, after you spend a certain amount of money, you get a $20 reward. Those have expiration dates on them, although Nordstrom's takes mine whenever I bring them in, even if they're expired or not. Banana Republic gives $15 to cardholders, gives $15 off a purchase during the month of your birthday. And again, those are shaped like a card, but they're actually a different material. And I was just thinking in my mind, I wonder if they do that to circumvent the language of gift card throughout statute in other states. So that's the type of promotional cards that we, the members that I represent, offer. If you buy a significant amount of electronic equipment from Circuit City, especially during months that they're having promotions, perhaps when new software comes out, then they will, if you spend a certain amount, then they will also give you a reward. Those are promotions.
Further questions? Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bill and Julie, thank you for being here. I just want to explain, I guess, to the committee, not to y'all because you're on the other side, but you're talking about electronic, basically. Are you talking about electronic cards that can be tracked electronically? Or if you're just talking about what is given out of restaurants or various retail stores, I just want to explain that those are just two out of hundreds and hundreds and thousands of different kinds of gift cards, gift certificates. And to me, they're all the same. It's one thing. It is a gift. I mean, it is gifted to somebody, and it doesn't matter whether it was donated, purchased, or stolen. It does matter, but I'm just saying we're starting to really get into back to what this my message from my aide said, you know, making a big bureaucracy out of something. So I think for us to try to categorize these, you know, pretty soon we're going to have a retail one, a restaurant one, a, you know, a Fred Meyer, you know, and on down, and the local pizza place. I think they're one and the same. Gift certificate, reward. Donated or purchased doesn't mean anything because somebody spent money on it. I don't care who it is, and it's probably me. Also, the one thing, though, that really is a big concern to me is the tracking required by a business who issues these. I mean, does a business, what is their, you know, system? Maybe we can say, well, that's their tough luck. But they can issue great volumes of these and not even know it if they don't consider them actually a cash, you know, a of some value. But the most important is, to me, is what is transferable? You know, when the Safari restaurant goes out of business and, you know, I bid and won this $200 dinner for four gift certificate, I've just lost money. What would be done in that case, Bill?
Chair Holby, Representative Nelson, I would say that in that example, you're probably not the only one that lost money since the Safari went out of business. Now, I think you're going to get the other people to come up and say that's why they want to have the bill turned over. But ultimately, when the business goes out of business and declares bankruptcy, I mean, they relieve all debts and liabilities. And so, I mean, nobody gets the money, even under an audit system. So to say that there's going to be a liability there, it erases. That's the nature of bankruptcy or going out of business. I mean, unfortunately, nobody wants that to happen. And I would say nobody, I think, in the retail business ever gets into business planning on going out of business. So you're really trying to keep the doors open as long as you can. So ultimately that person's going to lose the value of that card. I mean, in essence.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up, please.
Julie, you kind of went over this with your mother-in-law giving you the Nordstrom's or Macy's card. That's the other type of transferability. You know, if somebody's name is placed on a gift card, I mean, can they endorse this gift card so that their son can go down and, you know, get a new filter or whatever he wants for his car? That's the other type. Your mother-in-law doesn't have to because that's just sent to probably whoever owns the account, right? And it doesn't put a specific name.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I want to make sure I'm understanding your line of questioning. You're asking me who owns this gift card, or how do I...
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. Julie, what I was saying is you got a card transferred to you from your mother-in-law, as I understood, because there's no name on it. If it had her name on it, would you be able to use it?
Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson, I don't know. We don't issue names on gift cards. The national retailers do not. She buys this for me. She goes through the grocery line at Safeway and decides that I looked frumpy the other day.
What a wonderful mother.
I know, and I'm not giving her up.
No, okay.
And so she just purchases them for me.
Okay. Well, follow up, Mr. Chair. I just know that this is a problem because, like on a lot of gift certificates, if I go down to the 1893 store and I get a gift certificate for my daughter and something she didn't want, she'd like to give it to a friend who'd be able to use it, you know. And we don't have a way to transfer cards that have or gift certificates that have names on them. So that's, I'm just trying to point out that there are other issues, and that happens to be one of them.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, since I represent some pretty large national retailers, all of them use gift cards now and don't have the first name and name of the holder of the gift certificate.
Further questions? Thank you very much for your testimony today. And if you have proposed amendment suggestions, maybe you can work with Representative Tomei in taking those to her, and she can work with Representative Nelson and Riley. And Bonamici, I think, also had an interest in this.
Because she's on the bill.
Yeah. No, there's four of you.
And as far as Gillian, I just want, and he didn't offer to help. Which I think if he were a good co-signer, he would.
Yeah. But then we'd have a quorum and we couldn't do it.
So, next up, Lori Wimmer Whalen and Otto Schell. Still speaking on House Bill 2513.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. For your record, Lori Wimmer Whalen, representing the 46,000 members of the Oregon Education Association, and part of a coalition of advocates who requested a bill that has been referenced ever so slightly today, which is why we've come forward. That bill, sponsored by Senator Ben Westlin, is Senate Bill 460, which has a similar concept plus. And I think, actually, the plus part of that bill answers and remedies a number of the questions that were brought forward, including the question of what happens when a business goes out of business or leaves the local community. Our solution, and this is the second session we've brought the bill. You may remember it passed the Senate and didn't quite make it all the way in the House last session, but we're hopeful that could change. This bill also says no expiration dates and no service fees on purchased cards, and it also exempts prepaid bank cards and some of those other kinds of things that aren't quite the same as the traditional gift card, so that we were trying to be responsive to the business community in hearings on the Senate side. In fact, that bill is supposed to move on Wednesday, I believe. What it does, though, additionally, is it says that after 3 years of inactivity on the card, like so many other financial instruments in all 50 states, Oregon included, that inactivity and value gets reported then by the retailer to the Unclaimed Property Division at the Department of State Lands, just like a payroll check you may have forgotten to cash, or an insurance payment that didn't find its way to you, or what have you. And before the hearing on the Senate side, I found that 3 of the 5 members of the Senate Revenue Committee actually had unclaimed property over there waiting for them. A lot of us have things that slip through the cracks, even if we think we're good financial managers. In any case, in that bill, we add back the gift card as one of the many instruments that would then, after 3 years of inactivity, be reportable as unclaimed property. The reason the education advocates have an interest in this, you may be wondering, is that the interest off that value accrues to the Common School Fund. And the estimate is that there would be a very large amount of interest over time. These gift cards are now the number one most purchased gift in America. And last year to this year, they grew by 20%. That we don't see abating anytime soon. So we're trying to ride the upswing and think creatively about ways to endow the Common School Fund so that the interest, which is local revenue to schools, can accrue and be another solution to the school funding problem. So we're trying to think creatively. 38 different states have laws like this on the books, and we think Oregon should be the 39th. As I said, if a business is out of business and you have that 3 years of value, 3 years of inactivity, you would be able to go to the Unclaimed Property Division and say, I have this card my Aunt Betty gave me. I didn't ever cash it, or I haven't used all its value in the last 3 years. Has that been turned over? You fill out a form that you can download, and you can get your value back. So that's a remedy to the problem that was mentioned in that regard. Now, I'd like to correct the record on a couple things. One, with all due respect, one former testifier said that our concept would create a bureaucracy. It does not. It simply adds one more thing that's already done, as I said, in all 50 states under the cheat laws of all 50 states, which is sends it to the Unclaimed Property Division. Someone else said that it represents the state taking the people's money. It does not. That's a common misperception. The state holds it as a custodian in perpetuity forever for that claimant to come forward. So it is a good consumer protection issue. It is the natural last piece of this issue, in addition to banning expiration dates and service fees. The chief sponsor, with whom members of our coalition have spoken, has indicated support for amendments to this bill so that it would replicate that concept. And with that, I'd be happy to take your questions.
Questions? Representative Galizio.
Are there any important differences between these cards and other financial instruments, for lack of a better term, that are already used for or become unclaimed property?
Mr. Chair and Representative Galizio, I think not. The one issue that came up in our discussions on this bill, which, as I said, we have offered amendments to this time that make it a little bit more business-friendly than the one that passed the Senate last time, is that the Department of State Lands issued an amendment that made clear who was the owner and where that ownership would accrue if there was a question whether the buyer of the gift card or the recipient of the gift card was the owner, so which unclaimed property division would receive it after the 3 years. But with that exception, it's essentially the same thing. As a matter of fact, we did some research when we were looking at this issue to see what kind of records are kept by retailers, and we found that most people purchase cards either over the internet or with a credit card. So there's all this electronic consumer data that's encoded in those strips and online that makes tracking of purchases far more information rich than I think any of us realizes as consumers, the data that's out there about us. And so we've found that particularly with respect to the big box stores and the national retailers, there's a lot of value out there. I think last year Best Buy, for example, had $42 million. Is that right? $42 million of unclaimed property off of those gift cards. And the restaurant, let's see, do I have that with me? I didn't bring it. But one of the websites I found for the restaurant industry said that they believe that the rate of unclaimed gift card value from restaurants is about 18%, at 18 to 20, and that they see the value of every dollar sold in gift cards there is worth $1.20 to the retailer.
Interesting. I'm going to go ahead and let the next testifier go so we can try to keep on schedule here. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Otto Schell. I'm the Vice President for Legislation with the Oregon PTA, and I'm here on behalf of our 22,000 members statewide. It seems that this is an idea whose time has finally come, as Representative Nelson was reminding us. We've been slugging away at this one for a while. I'm heartened to hear many of the retail representatives say that they already get it, that the expiration, that many bigger retailers have moved to a no-fee, no-expiration date, and we just think that this would provide the continuity between among the various vendors. Parents use these a lot, as Representative Nelson and some of you others have referenced, for fundraisers, for things like that. The common complaint or the common concern then is when things when the card is lost track of, as the chair has referenced, you know, the value doesn't benefit the holder, the intended holder, and we think that there's a way to figure that out to protect the consumer. That's the main thrust of our interest. We agree with the presentation about the Senate bill. We've been working on that throughout the session. We think that by providing the same kind of protection that we provide for other abandoned property and ultimately potentially benefiting the common school fund with the interest that would be spun off of that, it's a good and creative way to fund schools, protect the consumer, and move all these things forward. So any questions?
Questions from the committee? Representative Nelson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Laurie, you and Otto would find some way to get a little more money. I just can't believe this. And I don't blame you, but anyway, that's an interesting concept that you have, and I appreciate it. But let me just say this. You know, kind of the worst thing we can do is, you know, give business a mandate. And if we're going to require electronic tracking of gift everything by some way, that is a mandate to a business, and you know, there goes the increase in the, you know, the cost of the gift, because that's, you know, more expense for business and less benefit for the consumer. And I just wanted to throw that out. I think you'll find that contrary to what is said, that this electronic transfer is only a minimal amount of gift cards, gift certificates, or rewards in this state. And I tell you that from an individual who deals with them on the, you know, first-hand basis. I bet it's not 30%. And it's just amazing to me. We have the most giving, loving community here in Oregon, you know, that just loves to donate for good causes. That's how, in my opinion, all the good causes keep going. So, but as far as then to have to track all those, I think we're really going to be putting an undue burden.
Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson, I totally agree with you, which is why, as I said, ours designate only purchased cards, not donated cards, and also we exempt gift certificates. So only the kind that are already elected by the retailer or the vendor to be the plastic with the magnetic strip. If that's how they choose to do this, that they're the only ones that bill would apply to. We exempt the gift certificates.
And a follow-up, just a quick one.
Okay, one more.
I just want to mention one other concern for you there, the transferability. So when I go down to Macy's and buy 10 gift cards for my kids and grandkids for Christmas, and they give those to, you know, someone else, who really, when the state is keeping account, who really has that card? We'll never know. So that's another, I just pointing out, big problem. Okay.
Representative Riley?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two things. First one is just what Representative Nelson just said about who really has that card. And the answer, in my opinion, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that the state, after 3 years, would hold the value of that card under the bill you're talking about, hold the value of that card, and whoever comes in with that card is the holder of that card, because the stores don't know who the holder is. There's no person who actually has it. It's the bearer of the card.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
Mr. Chair and Representative Riley, I would love to defer that to Jeanette, who is here from the Department of State Lands, who is an expert on this, but my understanding is that there's a two-step piece that we have in one of the amendments. The first one is the purchaser, if that is known, and if the person who comes in with the card is the person, that's the second step, and then it is considered to be the person who is the holder.
Okay. Second piece of this, if I may.
Very quickly, please. Follow up.
Thank you. So right now the businesses have, in my opinion, two reasons for issuing gift cards. One reason is to get people to come into their store and use the gift card, and the other is the residual value of unused gift cards. We would then be taking one of those away and only leaving the advertising or bringing people into the business, that would be what was left of the gift card under your bill. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair and Representative Riley, I would suggest there's a third reason, and that is response to consumer demand. As I said, it's the number one choice of gift in America today, according to the trade journals that I saw online, which is that they're responding to the market demand. People think giving cash is gauche in some places, but a gift card somehow survives that etiquette blunder. So I think that's the reason they probably were invented, and I think it's probably the reason they're also very popular. You never return or get the wrong size of gift card. You also don't have to end
wrong color.
No. Further questions? Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for coming, and I want to make sure I understand what we're talking about. Are you talking about a different bill altogether or amending this bill?
Mr. Chair and Representative Gilliam, we're asking that the committee consider amending this bill as well.
And follow up, Mr. Chair?
Follow up real quick.
One of the reasons I signed on to this bill is because of the consumer protection aspect of it. I'm having trouble following. I see creative opportunity for a great cause, but I see what it sounds to me like involuntary action on the part of retailers participating in what you're suggesting. Do I have that right?
Mr. Chair and Representative Gilliam, these are retailers who do this on a regular basis in the majority of other states, and we simply see it as a natural extension of consumer protection for some of the other issues that were identified by previous testimony, as prohibiting expiration dates and service fees is a part of the problem. You fully protect the consumer against a business going out of business or against them leaving your little town so you don't have to drive 100 miles to redeem the card or what have you, if you have the ability to just download a form from DSL and get your money back that way.
Thank you. I appreciate your testimony today, and you know I'm going to try to keep moving at this point because we're not actually hearing Senate Bill 460 today, but if you wish to work with Representative Tomei and others on this dais that might be interested in talking about those concepts as to how they may or may not pertain to Senate Bill 460, I'm sure they would welcome your input on that, and perhaps we'll listen to Senate Bill 460 at a later date. Appreciate your testimony today. With that, was there anybody else in the audience that wanted to testify on House Bill 2513? Seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2513 and open public hearing on House Bill 2742. Steve, would you give us a little preview about House Bill 2742?
Thank you, Chair Holvey. House Bill 2742 prohibits the refusal of residential water or electricity service to a resident by reason of unpaid bill if the residence is the asset of an estate and unpaid bill is the obligation of the estate.
Thank you. First up, Alan Contreras, I believe. Is that correct?
Thank you.
Thank you. If you would state your name for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. For the record, Mr. Chair, my name is Alan Contreras. I live at 795 East 29th in Eugene. And because many of you know me in the context of being a senior administrator at the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, I want to just state that I'm appearing today as a private citizen. This does not have anything to do with my employment or the commission's business. This bill has to do with a rare situation when an occupied residence in which responsibility for utility payments lies not with the occupant, but with an owner who dies in a situation where the estate is in probate. I also want to mention that although the issue came up as a consequence of an estate that I was working on as a court-appointed representative, the bill does not affect the estate that I'm working on because we have dealt with all of our issues with the utilities involved. I ask that the bill be introduced because I think there's an important public policy issue here, although it doesn't involve a whole lot of people and is a fairly rare instance. You have in front of you a letter from me that also sets forth a few suggested corrections should the committee decide to bring out the bill. I'm afraid that what went into legislative council came out as a slightly different animal, and there are a couple of stray issues that were left over. The most important of these is in line 7 of the bill, which refers to the residence being an asset of an estate for which a personal representative has been appointed. The problem that brought this concept to my attention was precisely that it takes sometimes quite a while for the personal representative to be appointed, in my case approximately 2 months. What it ought to say is, pardon me, that when probate filing has been made, not when the personal representative is appointed. The difficulty we ran into is that the resident, in this case, was a person whose needs had been taken care of by her mother for approximately 15 years, who had no bank account, credit, or assets in her own name, who had no legal obligation to pay any of the bills, the mortgage, or anything else. And when her mother died, the legal obligation for all of those things fell to the estate, but it was some time before the estate had the ability to move forward and deal with these issues simply because probate takes a while. So the purpose of the bill is to, in that situation, which is quite uncommon, as I understand it, that utility bills would be treated the same way as would other debts against the estate, as long as the utility was notified that the estate was in probate. And I think, rather than rattling on forever, I'm just going to stop there and let you folks ask any questions you may have.
Questions from the committee. Representative Girard.
I understand this bill. I think don't you think we have to have something in here that notice has been given to the utility? I'm just trying to figure out how the utility is going to know that that this has occurred.
Mr. Chair, Representative Girard, that notice is required under Section 2, Sub 1, Sub C of the bill. unless there's a... That's no big deal. Unless the utility has received notice, I don't think it's reasonable to expect them to know that this is going on. I think that at the time the estate goes into probate, somebody needs to notify the utility, and that's why we put that in there.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Contreras, for bringing this to our attention. And it looks like, if I'm reading this correctly, that in this particular instance, the Eugene Water and Electric Board said, okay, we're not going to turn it off. Let's get it worked out. Is that correct? They did not terminate the service?
Well, what they said was that under their normal policy, they would turn it off. But because we had the estate attorney call and nag them several times, they said, we have decided to make an exception in this case and not turn it off. Now, that's very nice of them. I don't think that choice ought to be up to them whether or not to turn it off in that circumstance when the poor woman who's living there, who is unemployed and has certain medical issues, doesn't really have any mechanism through which she can pay the bill. Another way of putting that is I just don't think the utility in that situation ought to be able to turn it on or off as they choose. I don't think they should be able to do it at all.
Follow up. And are you aware of any other instances similar to this that would be addressed by this bill where the service has in fact been turned off?
No, I'm not. The issue came to my attention because I was very surprised that it could happen this way at the time that I was appointed to represent the estate.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Contreras, I just want to hug you for doing this. I'm kind of sad that on line 7 you're recommending that we take out a state for which a personal representative has been appointed, because just like Representative Bonamici just asked, I can tell you of many individuals who've had their electricity cut off, and I hope y'all watched the news recently to see the woman who'd lived without electricity for some 20-something years. When we have individuals that may, you know, through no fault of their own, have physical or mental limitations, I just think, you know, that the utilities, which are essential, in my opinion, to life rendering services, should not be allowed to be turned off. And so I think this line 7 would benefit, in this case, one of the cases I'm talking about, a personal representative was named for a developmentally delayed individual. And I think that does apply. Maybe there's another bill coming out. But thank you, and let's go. I think this is wonderful.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, thank you. I think as long as we simply say that once an estate goes into probate, the utilities have to continue until it comes out, that issue will solve itself. I mean, most estates have some assets, and it's not as though the utilities will never be paid. It's just that the process has to run first. And I appreciate your support.
Mr. Contreras, a question for me. Maybe you can help me with this a little bit. Normally, under, you know, in a death or where an estate ends up owning their property, isn't there usually a mechanism for already in existence for the utilities to continue and the estate to actually make payment for those utilities even before a personal representative is appointed?
Not that either I or the estate's attorney could determine. Now, part of the situation is that the person living in the house, of course, had no assets because for 15 years or so she'd been taken care of without relying on any public assistance programs, because her mother felt that was not appropriate, because her mother could take care of the costs. And so the person living there, you know, had never tried to take advantage of any of these things. I could take no legal action, nor could the estate's attorney, until my appointment occurred, which was almost 2 months after the death. So it's not a common situation, but now we know it can happen.
Thank you. Any further questions? Seeing none, thank you very much for your testimony today on this bill. And next up, Jason Heuser and Mark Freeman. Thank you for coming today. If you state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Mark Freeman. I work at Eugene Water and Electric Board. Okay. We're here, essentially we view this bill as a way for the heirs to continue to provide or get services without paying for them. In this situation, if whether the money is available or not, there may be situations where money was owed prior to the death, and the occupants, once the death has occurred, they always have the opportunity to put the power or the utilities into their name. The way this bill is written is it doesn't matter who is occupying the residence. The bill strictly says as long as the asset, which is the real property, is in probate or is part of the estate, that the utility cannot collect upon any of the utilities that are accumulating at that residence. For instance, according to this bill, since it is tied to the real property, not who is occupying the residence, the estate could rent the property out for profit and keep the property, the utilities, in the estate's name and choose not to pay the bills until the property comes out of probate. So there's no way for the utility to monitor who is or is not in the property and who is utilizing the utility services. UWEB is very keen on the social part of our utilities. UWEB is the largest municipal utility in the state, and we also are nationally known for the amount of monies we put in towards our low-income programs, in excess of $2 million each year, which help over 4,000 households each year. That's just UWEB money. That's not any state money. That's not any federal money. So in this case, we are more than willing to work with the occupants of the home to provide any assistance that is available to get over the hurdle of things like deposits and whatnot if there is no financial standing with the individuals who are in the home. We also offer an appeal process, which means if the customer does not hear or see what they like, they can appeal the process. We also have a medical needs process, which postpones for quite a bit of time for any action taken against the utilities as far as keeping them on or turning them off. So outside of the safety net of our community and the funds that EWEB makes available, it's difficult for us to look at just for the fact that an estate is in probate, because the way this is written, it has nothing to do with the situation of the individuals that either are or are not occupying that. We could be paying for the utility bills as they're remodeling the house to get it ready for sale for the estate, that we don't feel the rest of the ratepayers should subsidize these type of situations basically indefinitely until the property is taken out of probate.
Thank you.
You nailed it, so any questions, we'd be happy to answer.
Questions from the committee? Representative Nelson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Freeman. Is that right?
Correct.
And I don't know the other man's name.
For the record, I'm Jason Heuser, Legislative Affairs Representative for UWEB.
Jason Heuser. Okay. Thank you for being here today. Let me just ask you what you in this situation are recommending be done. Would you have, had not someone prevailed, would you have just cut off electricity for this individual who was incapable of taking care of herself?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, if we did not know the situation of whether the home was occupied or not occupied, we have over 83,000 customers. We can't know what is going on. So if we did not know, if it wasn't brought to our attention of what was happening in the home, yes, it's very likely that the power and the water would be shut off. But once it is brought to our attention, we have programs that are available both internal to EWEB as well as external in the community to take care of situations like this.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Yes, Mr. Freeman, I am so sad to hear you say that, and I think that's cruel. But I want to just say what this individual, apparently, this woman who died had been paying this, and then all of a sudden hit a situation where she demised and nobody was paying for a period of time. Wouldn't that bring you to some concern that you'd send a customer service individual over there to see if they're electricity needed to continue?
Chair Holvey, Representative Nelson, the situation would happen is there would be, before we start any process, I'm talking just for Eugene Water and Electric Board, there's a close to 90 days worth of service that is provided. There are letters that are sent, bills that are sent, final notices that are sent. We send a representative out to the home to deliver the door hanger that says we'll turn disconnect services, and when we disconnect it, we send a representative out to the home. I supervise those folks, and my mandate to those folks when they go out is to keep your eyes and ears open to see if there's a situation out there that requires something different be done as opposed to just the normal of turning the services off. But again, if we do not know, we're aware that somebody, we may not even know the person has died. We don't know the age of the person there. We don't know any of the family situations of the people there. We can't know that for 83,000 people. So we have to treat each individual situation, you know, and we don't have the time or the resources to knock on the door and ask, what's the situation at this house?
Follow up.
Yes, I just wanted to tell both of you, Mr. Huser and Mr. Freeman, that I think, you know, you need to have customer service that really, truly cares about your customer, because these utilities are life-rendering, and this individual could have well been on some kind of a machine, oxygen machine or something else, and for y'all to just abruptly do this because you put some dang door hanger on doesn't give you an excuse, and you should be liable.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, I guess I take exception to that from the point of view that if somebody is taking care of that person, there are three or four.
Died, Mr. Freeman. She died.
I understand that.
Okay.
Can I continue?
Continue, please.
Okay. Do you know, Chairman Holvey, Representative Nelson, are you aware in your district, in your position, everybody who dies and takes care of, make sure you take care of everybody that you're responsible for?
Mr. Freeman, let me tell you, everything I've just said to you, I say to my great municipality. And for some reason, they have the compassion to send somebody to care about an individual whose utilities need to be cut off, and I think you should, too.
I think perhaps there's a miscommunication on the issue before us here, and I'm going to move on to another question. Representative Gerard.
Thank you, Chair Holvey. I'm a lot more sympathetic. So the part that kind of gets me is that if this goes into probate, and what you're saying is probate can go on for years and years and years, they could rent the place out, and you would be giving basically free power if there was not sufficient money in the estate to settle the estate. Is that kind of the crux of it?
The way it's written, that would be very possible, and we see those situations consistently.
Yeah, for a side comment, my parents' estate took over 2 years to settle, so that's not uncommon.
Thank you. Further questions from the committee? Not seeing none, I appreciate your testimony, and I think you've given a little light from the utility point of view on this, and appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Next up, I have Don Goddard.
Do I have to?
Well, I didn't see anybody dragging you up, but give us your name for the record since you're up.
Don Goddard. I represent the Oregon People's Utility Districts, six small utilities in Oregon. And the only thing I could add to the discussion is our members haven't run across this situation in their experience, nor have I in my utility experience. And the point is that public utilities make a real effort to try to work with their customers when they know what the situation is. And the one thing that I'd like to add to the discussion is on the issue of cutting off people who are relying on electricity for life support systems, most utilities, or all utilities I'm aware of, have those specifically marked, and so the power is not shut off to those customers. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions of Mr. Goddard?
He's getting out of here. Mr. Goddard.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Goddard, thank you. Thank you for being a good, decent citizen who cares about others and all of your public utilities. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Come back.
Thank you for that. And, I don't believe that EWEB cares any less for their customers than any of the public utilities in this state. And I will say that I think that there was slight miscommunication about the topic. With that, anybody else wishing to testify on House Bill 2742? Seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2742 and open a hearing on House Bill 2792. Steve, give us a brief description of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2792 provides that a water utility mail notice of delinquency in a water bill to the property owner only if the utility asserts that the property owners are responsible for the bill.
Thank you. And committee, this actually looks like it's my bill. And it's a relatively simple bill, and just I think it's pretty self-explanatory. And with that, I'm going to call up Jason Huser to testify on this bill, and Mark Freeman, if you're brave enough to return.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think this bill actually has a whole different bent on protecting people and landowners, for that matter. If you would, state your name for the record.
Chair Holby, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jason Huser, Legislative Affairs Representative for the Eugene Water and Electric Board. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today. We're here today advocating passage of House Bill 2792, a what you see is what you get technical fix to a bill passed in the 2005 session, Senate Bill 563. Senate Bill 563 amended ORS 757-069 to require that water utilities mail notice of a bill delinquent 120 days to the real property owner. This change was attempting to address a constituent issue, Senator Roger Beyer, where a utility's billing policy meant that a tenant's unpaid bill impeded the ability of the new tenant to rent that residence out and for a future tenant to have water service. We actually understand and appreciate the sentiment behind that prompted Senate Bill 563. At EWEB, we would simply not hold the property owner nor a future tenant liable for an unpaid bill from a previous tenant. Neither the property owner nor the future tenant, provided the new tenant and or property owner was unrelated to the previous tenant, would be liable for a bill, nor would we withhold new service to that resident. Residents properly, EWEB would refer an unpaid bill to a collection agency, and that collection agency would pursue that previous water customer at that resident, not the property owner or a future tenant. So really an exemption from Senate Bill 563 for those utilities that only hold that water customer with the unpaid bill liable, really would incentivize compliance with the original intent of Senate Bill 563. Furthermore, it would address the following unintended problems when ORS 757-069 is applied. Since EWEB does not discuss an occupant or tenant's delinquent bill with an owner, unless the occupant has authorized the owner to receive that information, a notice of delinquency would be of no real meaning or value to an owner. Also, a notice of delinquency could refer to one or more former occupants or tenants and would not specify the identity of the occupant or tenant nor the amount owing. An owner who received such notice and contacted EWEB would not be given any personal information regarding the identity of the debtor, the amount owed, the dates of service, etc., of the occupant without prior occupant authorization. And really, this would result in some kind of confusing communication between the utility and the property owner. And there's an attachment with the written materials that are going out to the committee here that is a hypothetical phone conversation that could occur as a result of a property owner receiving this mailing. So the other thing, there's additional staff time and resources that could be required from these mailings. You have to go down and deal with the county to obtain those types of records, and that's an activity that someone would be engaging in instead of doing something more productive on the job. House Bill 2782, we think it's a real surgical technical fix that honors the original sentiment of the legislation passed in 2005. We would urge your due pass recommendation and hopefully something could be placed on the consent calendar. Thank you for considering our position, and we're happy to answer any questions that you might have about our legislation.
Questions from the committee?
You know I have one.
Would you like to ask me?
Yes, I would. Mr. Chair, I'd like to ask what happens when you send this notice to the property owner and she's dead?
Thank you for your testimony today. I really appreciate it. Anybody else wishing to comment on House Bill 2792? Not. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2792 and the House Committee on Consumer Protection is now adjourned.